Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
In the studio tonight, it is myself, the captain,
Riley,
and Peakless Mountaineer.
I was talking to somebody recently who has, you know, some kids or whatever, grown, right? You know, they're older, they're in their, you know, late 50s or whatever. But they've got some kids who are, I don't know, in their 30s or something. And they were talking about how, you know, they're changing careers, right? They went into, I don't know, tech or something like that, software or something. And they decided, no, they want to make a career change. And instead, they're going into government.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, why would they want to become a micro tyrant?
I don't know. What's up with these people that want to be micro tyrants? Do they think they're serving humanity?
Job security.
Well, okay. I mean,
no, pure and simple. We're never going to run out of, well, so long as the world doesn't get blown up and we haven't completely eliminated the institution of government, there's always going to be a job for people who want to be micro tyrants.
Yeah. But it's funny whenever I unleash that term to somebody who's obviously never heard it, micro tyrant, right? Because, like, they immediately get it, or it seemed to. Like, every time I've said it to somebody, I've seen, like, a facial expression, like, they're like, micro tyrant? Oh, that's actually a pretty good term for
what
they do.
It is a good term.
And, like, they realize that there is some, you know, at least on the surface, some element of force involved in their job, coercion, you know, that kind of a thing. Because, I mean, government doesn't really do anything. It doesn't have anything. It doesn't produce a product or a service. It
just, well, it, violence, oppression,
I mean,
these are products
it
slash
does
services,
produce services
that you will take.
It does appear to be produce services like healthcare or roads or mail.
Well, okay, but like it really doesn't do anything other than take a bunch of money from everybody else, take a hefty cut off the top and keep it all for themselves and their friends, and then, you know, subcontract the work out.
It's true.
If
that's
anything,
what they do.
If anything, they are inept project managers in that respect,
mm-hmm.
Right? Where,
but, Captain, mail is an essential service. We shouldn't have to pay for an essential service now, should we?
Dude, the mail can be replaced with existing companies.
Oh, they already did at one point. Lysander Spooner.
Right.
That's
famously,
right.
Famously, yeah,
that's
replaced
right.
The entire postal office. And because he was so efficient and so cheap, they made it illegal for you to ever do that.
Which is ridiculous because we should be able to do that. We should be able to compete against the post office.
They want everyone on Earth to believe that what unites them, what connects them, is government. I mean, the first thing everyone thinks about is, well, who will build the roads, right?
Right.
Right, because that's what connects us. That's how I got here, was roads. The thing that literally physically connects my house to this studio is roads.
Yeah.
And why would they? Because they could pick anything. They could pick dentistry or flowers or anything.
Healthcare.
Well, they're working on it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They really are.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
They even though it's a terrible idea, they're working
sorry,
on it.
I'm sorry, let's rephrase that. Disease subscription management.
That's actually a better
subscription
model.
Disease management.
Thank
yes,
you, yes.
Yes. Now, why did they pick roads? Why is that so important to them? Because they need to be the thing that literally holds society together.
Yep.
They can't allow people to realize that society can hold itself together, that human beings acting without coercion can decide to be friends with each other.
I've been driving around. It's springtime now. Like, all the snow's melted. We had almost 70-degree day yesterday or the day before. I'm not sure which one.
I think it may have been yesterday or the day before. I don't remember either.
So, of course, all of the divots in the roads are fresh, if you will. The potholes and the, you know, that kind of thing. The cracks and the bumps and all that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if the roads were free market, there would be some roads, depending on who's quote-unquote managing the roads, who the service RSP is, your road service provider.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be roads where, like, as soon as a pothole popped up, it would get filled that day.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really cool. I would definitely pay for that kind of service.
Right. Now, I'm pretty sure that this doesn't happen at the government level on any road anywhere around the globe.
So it's actually worse than you think. So not only would there be ones that, oh, wow, you filled the pothole that day? No, there would be advances in road technology that cannot exist.
Right.
Because, look, everyone, you know how this works. They have to spend the entire budget in order to get a bigger budget next year.
Can you imagine how easy it would be for, like, a community that, like, oh, you know, the bridge is broken. Somebody, you know, volunteers some time and put up a GoFundMe to, you know, we need approximately this much money to you know, rebuild or fix the bridge, that kind of thing. So everybody put it, you know, and if you're in the community, you chuck in what you can, if you can, if you want to. It's all voluntary.
Or you could donate manpower.
Right, you could donate, yeah, your labor, you know, that kind of a thing. And then, you know, when the project's over, you know, whatever's left gets redistributed or refunded back to whoever, you know, did the contributing, right? So if there's money left over at the end of the thing. Sometimes, believe it or not, and we make fun of them often here on Free Talk Live, sometimes the government program will have money left over at the end of the thing, whatever the thing is. And generally what they will do is they will use that money to find a reason to keep their organization going.
Right.
Instead of just being like, we're done with the one thing we set out to do. You know, there's some money left over. Let's refund, you know, whoever pitched in or give it back to the people. But that doesn't happen. But that, like, I feel like these things would happen. We would see a resurgence of what I'm going to call spontaneous organizations, right? Mm-hmm. Something like a bunch of labor firms or even like temp work or a construction consortium or several of them where people can and do accomplish these things voluntarily. So, again, just the example of the bridge goes down, something like a GoFundMe goes up. Some, you know, organizations are tabbed for doing the work. And then once the goal is met, the work is to go ahead, do it, do the work. And then once the work's done, you know, see where they're at. And then everybody disbands and goes on back to whatever they were doing before. If you hired some people, they still have their business. They've got other clients. They're busy, right? You know, you just become another client, you know, for these organizations, these construction workers. So,
and one thing I'd like to point out. So let's say, hypothetically, maybe it is in fact the most efficient system that we as a group own this, that, or the other road. Okay, well, as Greg from Intercoin will point out, this already exists.
Yeah.
Like, here's this building, here are these apartments. All of these are equally owned by everyone who's doing this.
Right.
Like, it is a collectively owned property. It's just a voluntarily collectively owned property, which is a very reasonable way to accomplish roads.
Yeah, and like, it scales.
Okay, right, right. Here's all these people. Like, we all need this road, so we all have a share in this road,
yeah,
so that it's that much easier for us to throw together, okay, well, we need to patch that pothole. Everyone put 50 cents in. Why? Because, yeah, well, it's our road.
Yeah.
Oh, turns out we've got, you know, $10,000 left after this. Okay, what are we going to do with that? Well, let's vote on it and figure out whether we're going to, oh, well, I think we should add this bridge here, or no, I kind of want my 50 cents back.
Yeah, small towns are an interesting microcosm of large cities because you can see what does and doesn't scale. For example, here in Keene, New Hampshire, there's been a move to replace the standard parking meter, right? That is 1 meter at one parking spot in the downtown area. And they're replacing that instead with many meters with one kiosk, right? So
wow.
There's going to be a kiosk now that you have to walk, you know, I don't know, several spaces away from where you're at max, and then go and, you know, put in your debit card or enter some money somehow, scan a QR code, all that kind of stuff, and pay for your parking. Now, imagine if the government was gone, you as a business no longer had to pay taxes for your business, for the property your business is in, or, you know, if you're leasing, then the owner of that property also doesn't have to pay that tax. And then you and the rest of the businesses on your particular street all get together and are like, hey, so we've already got this road. We need to figure out how to maintain it. You know, Billy here, my assistant manager, has got a good idea. Well, I'll just throw in, you know, X amount of money into this GoFundMe, and then every year we'll evaluate what needs to be done. Now, do we want to charge people for parking, or do we want parking to be free? And they're going to find out real quickly that it's more beneficial for them as businesses to have free parking than to make people pay.
Right.
Because if people want to, people are forced to pay for parking, why would they want to park at your business?
Right. Now, on top of which, so I believe parking in downtown areas would become free in the absence of government. And also, the reduction of the cost for maintaining the roads compared to what they were previously paying in taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Bobby, I think, in Florida. Is that right, Bobby?
Oh, yeah, man. Just was hitting the bowl, man.
I mean, go ahead, but the 420 rally is not till next Saturday.
He's starting early.
What's on your mind, Bobby?
Hey, Captain Kickass. I've really been enjoying your show tonight. And, yeah, they got the Iran and Israel. And I'm pretty sure I talked to you before, Captain Kickass,
sure.
Because I used to call Ian and Mark all the time, especially when they're like in the heyday, man. I know you're back in Olson and then before you moved from Seattle to New Hampshire. Because that was, you know, that takes balls to do that, dude. I really look up to somebody that has the balls to get down there. That's a big move. That's all the way across the country. And so, you know, it does encourage other people because, you know, as I see it right now, the Free State Project's not really doing that great, you know, because they got a big hit, you know, with Ian going to Vigil and Aria and everybody. And having somebody like you to step in and actually, you know, do what you believe, your principles. Somebody else that can actually do and lead, like Ian, kind of, you know, and I know you know you're not Ian, but, you know, you took the step. You did what you had to do, you know. And so, at least it's somebody to look up to because the Free State Project, would you agree, has taken a hit, you know, the past, you know, year?
I mean, like, they didn't reach their goal, right? Their goal was to get, I mean, they did reach their goal as far as signers, right? They got enough people. They wanted 20,000 people to sign up to make the move, but we did not get, or they did not get the 20,000 people to actually move. They triggered the move, and they got somewhere around maybe 25-30%, right? So, we don't have an official tally.
Well, maybe. So that's the problem. You're talking about a group that really doesn't like being on lists.
Right.
For pretty obvious reasons.
Right.
And there's really no telling how many people just very quietly moved, you know, especially up into the North Country where they don't really deal with that many people, but here they are.
Yeah, if we're talking official statistics, like I did not sign up for the Free State Project. I just moved here because I thought, there's a freedom movement going on in New Hampshire. I got to go.
Right.
Right. I didn't sign. I was just like, I'm going to go. Right. I got the opportunity. And so here I am. So, Bobby, I don't know. Was there a question in there somewhere? Did we cover?
Listen, here's the fun thing. I signed Free State Project thing 13 years ago. And I've been trying to get to New Hampshire for 13 years. I've been bumping and grinding. And so you didn't sign it. Here's the thing. And but you moved there.
Yeah.
I signed it. And I'm still working on moving here. Ain't that crazy? You know, so I think a lot of that has happened. And there's people in the Twitch chat asking when Aria's coming back. She's coming back, I think, December time.
So we don't have anything official. I don't have an update on that as of yet. I have a message out to her, and I haven't heard back from her. In a few days. The last I heard, everything was still on track for her to be out by the, we're going to call it the end of May, right? So June 1, right, is sort of our projected date for her to be released. I don't know, you know, what kind of timing, you know, how much time is she going to need to readjust to get herself settled back into regular life before she returns to the show. These are the questions that still remain. But I spoke to her. Her intent was indeed to come back, do the show. And so, you know, we can hear her firsthand recounting of all of the crap that she's had to endure while inside a federal facility, not to mention all of the dirt about the trial that hasn't been revealed to us because, well, we're not privy to all of that. Once she is released and out, we can start to hear some of that.
Yeah, the problem is the Bureau of Prisons, like the rest of government, is capricious and unpredictable. They will give you this amount of sentencing with no intention of ever actually having you serve that. Might be all of that. They might even, you know, keep you there a little longer just 'cause. But most people, they let out earlier, if they're well-behaved.
Yeah. So that was according to Aria. That was her last projection that she told me. She gave me three different scenarios. Like, if these two things happen, then I'll get out on this date. If these things happen, then I'll get out on this date. And if none of these things happen, then I'll get out at like June 1st or something like that. Right. So I don't, you know, the messaging system that somehow she got me approved to communicate with her in the prison system, like, it doesn't save your messages. So, like, I actually went back to look at that information, and the message is gone. It just, like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's crazy.
The title of your car is usually issued by your state, right? Mm-hmm. In the U.S., anyway. So, you know, you buy a car in New Hampshire, it comes with a New Hampshire title. You buy your car in, you know, I don't know, Oklahoma, it comes with an Oklahoma title. And if you move from Oklahoma to New Hampshire, you got to go to the, you know, the town clerk or whatever the bureaucratic office is. You've got to hand them your Oklahoma title. You got to fill out some paperwork, pay some money, and then wait for them to issue you by mail a title for your vehicle in New Hampshire. Why do you have to wait?
Because it's an inefficient system.
Bureaucracy. That's why. It's the same reason that there's still many states where you go in for your driver's license and you get the photo taken and everything, and they just give you like this black and white printout of what will eventually look like your license while you wait for it to show up in the mail in 2 to 6 weeks. The technology exists, people, for titles to be printed on demand on the spot. The technology exists, people, for driver's licenses to be printed on demand on the spot.
Yeah.
But, like, for whatever reason, bureaucracy is like, well, we can't do that.
Oh, I'll tell you the reason
we
exactly.
We can't do that.
No, I'll tell you exactly the reason. The reason is there are jobs at stake. There are a lot of jobs that are in this centrally planned
printing.
And
we can't hurt people's jobs, Captain. Do you really want to unemploy a bunch of people? How dare you?
That is the scary part of government, is that it is the largest employer in the U.S. right now.
Yeah. Well, obviously. And that's part of the point of gaining political power, is that you get to give all these cushy jobs to your favorite cronies. And they get to give a bunch of cushy jobs to their favorite cronies.
Yeah, if you are employed by government at this point in your career, at the point of you hearing my voice talking about this, do yourself a favor and start learning some new skills.
Yeah.
And that would be really good for you, because working for a terrorist organization never turns out well for you.
Quite literally.
Yeah, and let's look at what the effects of this are. Here we are on the precipice of literally ending the human species. That's where we are.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you, like, exactly how this can play out. Could. Not necessarily will, but could play out very simply like this. So, step one, America really likes Israel and has been ginning for war against Iran anyway for a real long time. It's
they've been using propaganda so much propaganda to spur on this war, if you will.
Yeah, so the next move that they're likely to make is very simply they're going to put a bunch of military equipment and important personnel in their property, on their embassies, on their military bases that are in, conveniently located in Israel.
Yeah.
But first,
so all of these great targets, in order to get to them, you have to bomb American soil, which means it triggers NATO.
Yes.
So every other country that is in the North Atlantic Trade Organization, all of them have to act as if you just bombed their sovereign soil.
I'm going to make a potential prediction. I could be wrong, but I'm going to predict that after this attack from Iran, Biden's going to issue some sanctions. But we all know how effective sanctions are. They don't work against the government. They work against the people.
How do we impose sanctions on Biden from speaking or even, you know?
Don't listen to him.
Turn
that's
off your television.
That's what I've done. I've imposed sanctions on politicians at large. I turn off the TV and the radio whenever they come on and are going to speak. I do the same with these debates. Like, there was some kind of a debate between somebody and someone that the Liberty community, like, thinks is a cool person or something, does some good podcast or something, I don't know. And they're like, did you? And I'm like, I don't even know who these people are. No, I didn't watch.
Mm.
You know, because, like, it's not important to me to, like, I don't know, this weird, like, cheerleading thing goes on.
Yeah.
Right? Within the Liberty community. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, if you want to spend your time doing that, that's your choice. You go ahead and do that. I'm just going to spend my time doing stuff that, like, is going to be productive for me. I like reading about people who have sort of escaped the job thing, right? These are people who have, you know, entrepreneurs or they're otherwise freelance, you know, to some extent they actually work more than, you know, like an 8-to-5 person.
Some of them,
but they are free to prioritize and, you know, knock out their, you know, things to do, their to-do list.
During the week?
Well, according to their own priority and their own hours, right? And this is a dream for many people. Many people will never achieve that dream. And I like that there is the ability to trade your labor for money, right? And that will exist in a voluntary society. You know, government is abolished, right? But will it be like the traditional 8-to-5 Monday through Friday? I don't think so.
First and foremost, now we're used to having 2 days of a weekend.
Right.
Now that, historically speaking, is bizarre. Now, if you look back in history, one of the reasons that, like, for example, that people hated Jews is because they refused to work one day a week. Hmm. That was revolutionary thinking.
Why did that get them hated?
One whole day where you won't work for me? How dare you not do what I tell you to do for one whole day?
Yeah,
I want you reaping my grain and carrying my rocks.
Well,
okay, we got to exterminate these people. They're spending a whole day not doing what I tell them to.
Well, people existed in a lot of slavery mentalities.
Yes.
I own you, therefore, I get to tell you what day you're going to take off now.
But one of the innovations that cannot happen until government is abolished, or at least severely reduced, is something like traffic congestion in big cities, right?
Mm.
All these businesses are open Monday through Friday 8-to-5, right? This, you know, corporate hours, right? Whether it's a tech company or a construction, it doesn't matter, right? All these businesses that are in these downtown areas of these big cities, they all operate between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. in whatever time zone they're in. These cities, the governments of these cities, do not incentivize anything outside of that structure.
Right.
Whereas in the absence of government, all of a sudden businesses would be self-incentivized to, have their hours not be 8-to-5, be, you know, 7-to-4, or some other different varying degree of, like, when people come into your headquarters to do their job, so that they can avoid the rush hour traffic, the traffic congestion that happens, mm-hmm. you know, an hour or two before and an hour or two after this 8-to-5 period of time. Like, the solution is simple. You just got to prioritize the traffic or incentivize the people who are driving to and from to drive during not so standard hours.
Right.
That's the solution, but it can't be innovated until government gets out of the way.
Yeah, one of the issues of everyone paying for roads and everyone getting them for quote unquote free is that there's no effort put into figuring out who gets to use them when. Mm. So if I was running a road, it would be perfectly reasonable for me to say, like, I'm sorry, between this hour and this hour, you have to pay me twice as much if you're using my road. Hmm. There's too many cars on my road during these hours.
Right.
So if you want to add to that problem, you need to give me something extra. And then all of a sudden, you know, A, there's plenty of people who will like say, hey, employer, I'll be here at this time, but I'm paying extra to be on these roads at this time.
Right.
I need you to give me more money so that I can pay that guy to be here at the time you want me here. And then the employer can go, oh, well, actually, if you could show up an hour earlier and leave an hour later, that'd be great. All of these things that could happen that could be explored,
right?
If they weren't in the static system of government,
right? The organization known as government disincentivizes innovation wherever it lives.
It has no imagination.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's not possible. Like, people have gone to work for government entities and been like, hey, I've got an idea. Like, wait a minute. We don't do that around here.
We got to go file that in triplicate in a form somewhere, and then we have to get approved by the bureaucracy at some point.
We don't just have ideas.
We can't just have ideas around here.
Well, and look at right now. Okay, so we discovered exactly how much of our commerce could be done over the internet. Why weren't we doing this beforehand? Oh, because there's no competition.
Right.
Because of the corporate structure, which is fundamentally a government creation.
It's so funny being involved in voice over IP telephone systems, right? And that gets into like what they call unified communications, which is just like your phones, your conferencing, your web meetings, right? All that kind of stuff. Being involved in that like before COVID and then during COVID, right? Because all of a sudden, there was incentive for all of these companies to get on board with remote workers. A lot of the reason people choose to work remotely is because they want to have more freedom. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to take advantage of arbitrage, right? So they make, like I did, like I was making a Seattle salary, and I moved to New Hampshire, Keene, New Hampshire. Cost of living, half.
Right.
As far as like
rent. And you're able to save a lot more money, I'm sure.
And that's a big part of why in the future we're not going to have the centralized hub system that we have had so far.
Right.
Everything is moving to network instead of hub, which is a level of change that people have not even begun to grasp.
Now, maybe they're afraid of like just a mass exodus to like Mexico or something like that by U.S. remote workers. I know that there's already more people looking to expat or at least spend time, you know, whatever they need to. I'm trying to remember what the there's some caveats to like living in Mexico. Like if you're gonna do it, you gotta have stay there for most of the year, but then you have to come back for some period of time, a period of weeks maybe or something like that, before you can return on your visitor's visa, that kind of stuff. You can only kind of purchase property there. You have to go through a bureaucratic process to Fiadissimo, something like that. That you have to, it's a lot like starting your own LLC, right? There's a whole bunch of paperwork you got to fill out, and then basically this trust, this front company, buys the property, and then you lease it from them, and that's how you buy property in Mexico. You also can't buy on like the coast, right? They, you know, there's ways to do it, but it's going to cost you like three times the money. But the cost of living down there is still like reduced compared to the U.S.
So right? Why on earth are companies not letting you move to Mexico? Like, what's in it for them?
I really don't know.
Other than authoritarian control, I have no idea either.
Yeah. Other than like, oh, we can't have our all employee Christmas meeting, right?
You good.
Like, who cares, man? You know, yeah. Dear employers, first of all, stop buying pizza as a treat for your people. That's not a treat.
It's not.
Pizza's not a treat.
It's not.
You want to do something nice for your people?
Give them nutritious food, maybe.
Or throw some extra dollars on their paycheck, or hand them a gift card if you're worried about taxes. Right?
Well, no, the whole point of buying pizza is that it was cheap for us. We don't want to give you money. That's the one thing we don't want to do.
I'm lucky that I actually worked for a company at one point that actually gave us nutritional food.
Nice.
That's amazing and rare.
Yeah. It got to a point, though, the last time that I was in the office environment, it got to a point where they would send out like an email to everybody. Hey, everybody, we're going to have this, you know, whatever it is, you know, Halloween, you know, we're going to celebrate Halloween on Friday at, you know, 3 p.m. We're buying food for everybody. If you have specific dietary needs, please reply to the HR person, right? So, like, you could be like, yeah, I'm on no carb carnivore. can I get a steak? Right? Yeah, they'll bring you like a hamburger or something like fun, you know. But like they will go out of their way to like make sure that you get something.
Yeah, I'm that one guy that it backfires on them because what they're trying to do, they're trying to give you feelings. They want you to feel a certain way. Mostly, they want you to feel as if this thing that is not your bloody family is a family. Because, you know, your family is the thing that you work for free for.
Yes.
And that's what they want. Yes.
It's the most annoying thing about having worked for many companies, right? I've worked for many startups or even restarts, depending on how you want to look at these things. Venture capital funded, private capital funded companies that, you know, were in the red And then we had to get into the black before we could be sold and then absorbed by another kind, this kind of a thing. So it creates opportunities, right? And I love that. I love that, like, if you found a deficiency in how the business was being run and you brought it to somebody's attention, they'd be like, great, you're in charge of that now. And so now you get a whole different role. You can change a career, right, just by having an idea of how to improve things. So I love that about it. But what I didn't like was all of these companies have to come up with these mission statements, right? Mm-hmm. And they all say the same thing. Yep. They're worded slightly differently, but exactly what you said. They're like, well, we don't consider ourselves a company. We consider ourselves a family.
And that's a red flag when they call themselves your family.
It really is.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's,
and I am one of those guys that it backfires when they do pizza because I'm gluten intolerant. So that means you forgot because I've told you.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners. This is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
We're circling back to something we talked about in the first hour.
Indeed.
And that was?
The Iran-Israel conflict.
All right.
Which there didn't used to be an Iran-Israel conflict, like, what, a week ago?
Like a day ago, even.
You mentioned
the bit about Israel bombed the Iranian
embassy. Yeah. It was consulate embassy, whatever.
Okay.
Same difference. They all sound the same or act the same to me. Yeah. I don't know the difference.
Yeah. And
consulbissy.
Consulbissy.
Yes, there we go.
Embassilate.
Judges? The judges aren't here today.
Seems like imbecilic, but imbecilic.
Anyway, so Israel took out their, their little location within their gangland territory.
Right.
And so now...
Well, in Syria. So that's the fun thing about consulates and embassies. Oh, it was Iranian soil. It just happened to be in Syria at the time. Which is part of my like probable projection for the next move, because America's been ginning for this war forever. They were really, it's one of the things they were pissed at Trump about, is that they had it set up. They were ready to go to war with Iran over this. What did they do? Shoot down one of our toys?
Yeah, pretty much.
And he's like, wait a second.
This is such a good idea after all. No,
he asked, wait a second. How many people is this going to kill? Well, I don't know. Do you want me to find out? Yeah, go ahead and find out.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, that was at the beginning of 2020 when the COVID mania began.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is a big part of why COVID mania began. Like, they need to spend dollars. They need to spend more and more and more dollars. So they need reasons to spend more and more dollars. Otherwise, you realize how much they're stealing from you. So since we weren't going to be ginning up a new war, we had to do something. So it was really convenient for both China and America to do this, because China had the Hong Kong riots to deal with. Hong Kong was like demanding that they have, political rights because they had economic rights. And apparently that's how that works. You get enough economic freedom, you start demanding political freedom. And yeah. Anyway, so Trump asked a very human question. How many people will this drone strike kill? And of course, they didn't know immediately, because that's not what the military does. No. Okay, so they found out, looks like about 100 people for, shooting down one of your toys.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that didn't seem like a measured response. Holy crap. Anyway, so fast forward to today.
Okay.
Now the U.S. is trying to get back into war with Iran via Israel. So I still think the way that they're going to do that is a bunch of this embassy consulate nonsense, or they'll build a bunch of like new American military bases that just so happen to be right next to every valuable military target in Israel. Whatever way floats their boat to make sure that, we did not attack Iran. Iran attacked us.
It's right. The way the military industrial complex funds itself. They sell the American people a war.
Yeah.
They sell it to you as though we actually need this stupid war to save a certain group of people.
Yeah, because Iran is such a threat to us. Really, it is. And so one way or another, the U.S. is going to get into this war. It might be a nice slow drip, drip, drip. We do a proxy war kind of thing. But sooner or later, America gets in on the Israeli side. And then Russia gets in on the Iranian side because they're close allies. Sooner or later, one way or the other, Israel will get enough American backing to push back on Iran. And then Iran will need Russia to get their backing. And Iran, of course, and Russia's backing will, of course, be officially or unofficially at the time from China. Hmm. Like, a big part of Chinese manufacturing base is currently going into the Russian military industrial complex right now, just so they can maintain the proxy war that exists in Ukraine.
I believe this is David Ridley of the Ridley Report. You're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I have an update on a subject that is near and dear to your heart, and that is Ian Freeman's incarceration.
Ooh, do tell.
Please give us the update.
So it's not quite such an update on what happened to him as what happened to me when I tried to communicate with him.
Oh.
So I sent him a letter about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it came back yesterday or day before, roughly. And so when I mailed it to him, I didn't just write his name. I wrote Ian Freeman, and I had a stamp on the envelope that had the word freedom on it.
Mm-hmm.
So after Ian Freeman, I wrote Ian Freeman, who deserves, and then I pointed an arrow to the stamp.
All
right? So the letter came back a month later, and it said, writing on outside of envelope, which is not address, is not allowed.
They do not acknowledge that anyone there deserves freedom.
Yeah, Bonnie actually ran into that early on when she sent the letter, and like on the back of the envelope, just as she was sealing it, she drew a little heart on the back of the envelope.
And why shouldn't she be allowed to? It's her husband.
And they sent it back. They were same thing, David. Same thing happened.
So the way I look at this, I was not angry or sad when I got it back, because Ian, he doesn't need a letter all that badly. He's getting letters. But what he does need is publicity. And I'm always looking for any excuse to publicize my concerns about the arrest of Ian Freeman.
Yes.
Over cryptocurrency. So that gave me a chance to, you know, remind 170,000 of your listeners about the injustices being done to your former host.
Yeah. And it still goes on. For those of you who don't know, Ian has finally been taken into a federal facility. He's down in Massachusetts now, according to my information. Or if he's not there today, he will be there shortly.
Massachusetts, huh?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I believe he will be in the same facility that Arya's in, but never shall their paths cross. For at least according to what I've been told from Bonnie at this point. So
that figures.
We have lost. We were able to communicate with Ian before they moved him to the federal facility. Because he was kept at a county facility, they're a little more loose with things like phone time and letters and visitation and that kind of stuff.
They were able to give him a tablet.
Yeah, that's gone now, so we're going to have to adjust to not communicating with him as frequently. But the good news is, you know, he's still alive, he's still kicking, he's still as active as he can be, considering his situation. And so we hope for the best. What else did you have, David?
That is all.
Hey, thanks for the call. How can people find out more about you and what you do?
RidleyReport.com.
Right, I have a question for both of you. Riley, you go first. What is your least favorite sub-organization in government. So, like, if government is just, you know, the label we give all governments, then what is your most hated or, like, least favorite organization within the government?
I would say the Social Security Administration, because they incentivize poverty. And what I mean by that is if you're on SSI, you cannot make or save over $2,000 in your bank account. Because if you do, they take away your benefits.
Right.
And you're no longer allowed to receive their benefits because you have too many resources.
Interesting.
And to me, that's just so unethical. Because if I'm a working man and I'm still getting some benefit from the government, whether they want to reduce it or not to a few dollars here and there, fine. But the moment you say that I cannot save money,
right,
and you disincentivize saving money so I don't have to worry about your stupid system, is the moment I say I'm parting ways with you. I want nothing to do with you as an institution.
All right. Peakless, what is your least favorite sub-organization?
Oh, that's easy. CIA.
Creeps in action.
Oh, yeah. And look, so here's my thing. Like, every time someone proposes some way of reforming government, like, oh, we need to change the term limits or some nonsense, I point out how, like, that's not actually going to change anything of substance.
No, it's really not.
It's just going to adapt. And, like, look, I get it. Let's say that I can wave my magic wand. Boom. No more CIA. I know. They're just going to replace every single one of those functions. But the continued existence of the Central Intelligence Agency is an affront to human dignity. We know for a fact that they did these unbelievable, terrible things to everyone all of the time. We know for a fact that they take out leaders around the world. We know that they did mind control ultra programming on unsuspecting civilians, where they used LSD to try and create mind control assassins. And they're still there.
And they've infected people with diseases. Like, the black people were infected with I don't remember what the disease was.
Yeah, the Tuskegee Institute.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like, and just
syphilis.
Yes.
They were infecting people with syphilis.
Yes, intentionally syphilis. Infecting
intentional
people.
Infection with syphilis.
During Prohibition, government poisoned beer and wine and booze and stuff like that. So it's not beyond them to do that. Guess what my least favorite organization is?
The FBI.
The FBI. Was it that obvious?
It's because of context.
Okay.
And I mean, fair enough, because, like, at least the CIA has to pretend that they're not doing anything to me personally. The FBI, on the other hand, that's their job.
I had intended to just basically rip on NPR. I had a couple of articles from them. We're not going to get to them. So we're going to get to this one, though. We're going to talk about it. The headline: many FBI agents are struggling to make ends meet.
Oh, yay! poor people. I love it.
Wonderful. Right.
Housing costs are to blame.
Huh.
That's the second sentence
So it's almost like if you print a bajillion zillion dollars, like, your own torturers might get upset with you.
Hey, so you know the debt clock, right?
Yeah.
It's 35.
Oh, is it up to 35 now?
But almost.
It was at least 34.
35 what, though?
Man, 33 was like no time at all.
Trillion?
Just like 33 trillion to 40 to 34
how
trillion.
How long is it until we have to start making up new terms like bazillion or bagillion or whatever?
At this rate, it's going to be pretty quickly. Like, I know here in New Hampshire, there was a piece of legislation put forward saying, hey, if the debt gets to $40 trillion, it's time to leave the United States. Of course, it didn't pass, because we can't leave the United States. After all, it's dangerous. All
right. Well, and partly because I listened to the arguments on that bill. They all know that there's absolutely zero chance. And frankly, you can put any number you like there.
Yeah.
They know that there is zero chance whatsoever of the United States not getting whatever number in debt. Now, what's interesting right now is that we're reaching the point where no longer is the military our largest expense. Now, it's just the interest on the existing debt.
All right, so I want to get into this. Many FBI agents based in cities with a high cost of living are struggling to make ends meet, forcing them to make hours-long commutes or double up in apartments, according to Bureau and Justice Department officials.
Good.
Good.
They feel so.
Let's
oh, you mean they have
make
to
them hard, make it harder
have,
for them to
they
do
have
their
to
job.
Live like everybody else does since the government decided to flood the market with bazillions of dollars?
Mm-hmm. Now they get to feel what it's like to be a plebe.
Well, and let's be real specific on this. The reason that housing in particular costs go through the roof, through the Goram roof, is because they are bribing homeowners. Who are those homeowners? Well, they are the boomers, the largest voting bloc in America. They all owned their own home because they got to buy it on the cheap. So this is the way that the government gets to bribe every single one of them without looking like it's bribing them.
I have a question for both of you. Riley, you go first. What is your least favorite sub-organization in government? So, like, if government is just, you know, the label we give all governments, then what is your most hated or, like, least favorite organization within the government?
I would say the Social Security Administration, because they incentivize poverty. And what I mean by that is if you're on SSI, you cannot make or save over $2,000 in your bank account. Because if you do, they take away your benefits,
right?
And you're no longer allowed to receive their benefits because you have too many resources.
Interesting.
And to me, that's just so unethical. Because if I'm a working man and I'm still getting some benefit from the government, whether they want to reduce it or not to a few dollars here and there, fine. But the moment you say that I cannot save money,
right,
and you disincentivize saving money, so I don't have to worry about your stupid system. Is the moment I say I'm parting ways with you. I want nothing to do with you as an institution.
All right. Peakless, what is your least favorite sub-organization?
Oh, well, that's easy. CIA.
Creeps in action?
Oh, yeah. And look, so here's my thing. Like, every time someone proposes some way of reforming government, like, oh, we need to change the term limits or some nonsense, I point out how, like, that's not actually going to change anything of substance.
No, it's really not.
It's just going to adapt. And, like, look, I get it. Let's say that I can wave my magic wand. Boom. No more CIA. I know. They're just going to replace every single one of those functions. But the continued existence of the Central Intelligence Agency is an affront to human dignity. We know for a fact that they did these unbelievable, terrible things to everyone all of the time. We know for a fact that they take out leaders around the world. We know that they did mind control ultra programming on unsuspecting civilians, where they used LSD to try and create mind control assassins. And they're still there.
And they've infected people with diseases. Like, the black people were infected with I don't remember what the disease was.
Yeah, the Tuskegee Institute. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like, and just
syphilis.
Yes.
Yeah. They were infecting people with syphilis.
Yes, intentionally syphilis. Infecting
intentional
people.
Infection with syphilis.
During Prohibition, government poisoned beer and wine and booze and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
It's not beyond them to do that. Guess what my least favorite organization is?
The FBI.
Was it that obvious?
It's because of context.
Okay.
And I mean, fair enough, because, like, at least the CIA has to pretend that they're not doing anything to me personally. The FBI, on the other hand, that's their job.
I had intended to just basically rip on NPR. I had a couple of articles from them. We're not going to get to them. So we're going to get to this one, though. We're going to talk about it. The headline: many FBI agents are struggling to make ends meet.
Oh, yay! poor people. I love it. Wonderful. Right.
Housing costs are to blame.
Huh.
That's the second sentence there.
So it's almost like if you print a bajillion zillion dollars, like, your own torturers might get upset with you.
Hey, so you know the debt clock, right?
Yeah.
It's 35.
Oh, is it up to 35 now?
But almost.
It was at least 34.
35 what, though?
Man, 33 was like no time at all.
Trillion?
Just like 33 trillion to 40 to 34
how
trillion.
How long is it until we have to start making up new terms like bazillion or bagillion or whatever?
At this rate, it's going to be pretty quickly. Like, I know here in New Hampshire, there was a piece of legislation put forward saying, hey, if if the debt gets to $40 trillion, it's time to leave the United States. Of course, it didn't pass because we can't leave the United States. After all, it's dangerous. All right.
Well, and partly because I listened to the arguments on that bill. Mm. They all know that there's absolutely zero chance. And frankly, you can put any number you like there.
Yeah.
They know that there is zero chance whatsoever of the United States not getting whatever number in debt. Now, what's interesting right now is that we're reaching the point where no longer is the military our largest expense. Now, it's just the interest on the existing debt.
All right, so I want to get into this. Many FBI agents based in cities with a high cost of living are struggling to make ends meet, forcing them to make hours-long commutes or double up in apartments, according to Bureau and Justice Department officials.
Good.
Good.
I feel so. Let's you mean they have
make
to
them hard, make it harder
have,
for them to
they
do
have
their
to
job.
Live like everybody else does since the government decided to flood the market with bazillions of dollars?
Mm-hmm. Now they get to feel what it's like to be a plebe.
Well, and let's be real specific on this. The reason that housing in particular costs go through the goddamn roof is because they are bribing homeowners. Who are those homeowners? Well, they are the boomers, the largest voting bloc in America. They all owned their own home because they got to buy it on the cheap. So this is the way that the government gets to bribe every single one of them without looking like it's bribing them.
A nonprofit group from the city of New York reported that people need to earn at least $100,000 to afford food, housing, and transportation there. That number reaches $150,000 to cover a family of four. Right. So this is old news.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is old news. This has been around for 4 years, as near as I can tell. These numbers, these types of studies. And so just now NPR is publishing an article about, oh, the poor FBI agents.
We can't allow the thug class to go without. That's for everyone else to do.
So, Riley,
you've got to worry about starvation, not our thugs.
It sounded like you were trying to say something a minute ago.
I just want to say that, you know, if people want to have pity for the FBI for being poor, they need to realize that the FBI is making nearly $80,000 a month. Or is that a year? I forget which. But they're making a ton
it's
of money.
Per year, yeah.
Oh, per year. Well, they're still making a ton of money. For what? Harming you.
Yes.
Locking you in a cage.
Yeah. For enforcing unconstitutional rules, for those who do believe in the idea of like, well, we have this agreement and that's why we... No, none of them follow that. None of them have ever followed that. And if you ever want to like, oh, find out whether what they're doing was constitutional, you better be able to afford a lawyer, because our system is specifically set up so that they can do whatever they want up until a judge tells them to stop that one thing. And then they'll keep doing that to everyone else.
So listen to this. Representatives from the Agents Association have met with leaders at the FBI and the Justice Department to raise their concerns. Okay, so if I'm working for any other organization besides government and I'm having this problem, do I have representatives from... you know, the Fast Food Workers Association meet with leaders at the Justice Department to raise my concerns?
Nope.
No.
I don't get that privilege.
Huh.
Weird. The FBI says it needs both additional funding and authority from Congress.
My authority.
To pursue a housing allowance. Can we have an allowance? Can we take more money from everybody else and give it to us so we can afford expensive homes?
But the FBI has to keep us safe, Captain. Don't you understand?
Well, right.
And let's just look at what they're proposing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So where's that money going to come from? Oh, they're going to print it. Now, you might be saying to yourself, they'll just tax us more. That's not how it works.
Well, by printing it, they are sort of vicariously taxing
us. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So they're going to print more money so that the FBI can afford to have houses. So then there's going to be even more money in circulation. So then rent has to go up.
Right, to account for the inflation.
Yeah. It's almost like this doesn't actually solve the problem.
We are looking for a more permanent, sustainable solution for all individuals with these high-cost field offices, said Otto. at the Justice Department, Assistant Attorney General for Administration Jolene Loria said officials are aware of financial challenges that federal workers face in the field, not just FBI employees, but across other parts of the DOJ as well. The Justice Department is supportive of innovative efforts undertaken by the FBI. When has the FBI innovated anything?
Never. They're always working off the backs of the other people who have innovated, and they're just adopting the things that we have done as their free market slaves.
Well, see, what we do is we arrest people who made new stuff, and then we make them make that stuff for us, and that's called innovating.
They're also working across its components to identify achievable and sustainable strategies that support our people in the field, Loria said. The department is ready and willing to work with Congress on more permanent solutions. And I bet you not a one of them includes abolishment.
Right?
No.
Abolishment, reduction of the whole FBI apparatus.
Could you imagine
a monetary shift, you know, things that would actually cause lasting change.
Could you imagine them putting in their policies that we are going to reduce their force by 5-10% every year? No, they want to increase their budgets, increase their numbers in order to control the populace. They want to promote themselves as the good guys. Come be a hero for us.
Yeah, here's an idea. Maybe you wouldn't need so many agents if you were only enforcing crimes that had victims.
Yeah.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.